are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me, as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Our favorite episode of the week, it's Matchup Wednesday. Going to be breaking down key matchups to watch when the Seahawks host the Saints on Monday Night Football. A lot of intriguing matchups on both sides of the football that we're going to be diving into on today's show. Thanks for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms. This episode of Locked On Seahawks is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The Seahawks have been in the hunt for quarterback insurance ever since Russell Wilson underwent finger surgery 2 weeks ago. Pete Carroll even mentioned that they had contacted Cam Newton potentially about joining the Seahawks. Nothing seemed imminent there, but they did add to the room today a familiar face coming back to the Pacific Northwest as the Seahawks were awarded Jacob Eason off of waivers from the Colts. And Rob, I know that Eason was a player that intrigued you a lot, being a former five-star recruit, a superstar at Lake Stevens High School, which is about 10 minutes from where I live, about 30 minutes north of Seattle. He is a revered figure here, played 1 year at Washington, kind of had a disappointing season in some regards. The Huskies did not meet expectations as a team, but 6'6", 231 pounds, he has an elite arm, he has elite physical tools. If he takes to the coaching, this is still a player that with the right situation could be a really solid NFL quarterback. So this is an intriguing pickup, in my opinion, one that did not surprise me at all.
Well, it surprised me a little bit that the Indianapolis Colts allowed him to be available for other teams to pick up. But I think that this is a slam dunk selection or addition by the Seahawks because they do have the players in position to mentor a talent like Jacob Eason. As you said, Corbin, I mean, this is a guy that has the five-star arm, the five-star size. I mean, this should have been a first-round pick, and instead, he wound up falling to the middle rounds of the draft a couple of years ago, and the Indianapolis Colts brought him in, and I see all the physical traits that you want to see of a quarterback with Jacob Eason, but at the same time, there have been questions about his dependability, about his work ethic. And that is not something that you have any questions about when it comes to Russell Wilson or Geno Smith or some of the other quarterbacks that the Seahawks have brought into the fold. But at the same time, while you do have some of those concerns about some of the other backup Seahawks quarterbacks out there, do they have that big arm? Do they have that upside to one day be a potential starter? You don't have those concerns about Jacob Eason. And as you mentioned, this is a quarterback who has some Pacific Northwest roots. I love this reunification of Jacob Eason in the Pacific Northwest. To me, this is one of those gambles that is a high upside with very minimal risk. And so to me, this is exactly one of the things that you are excited about as a Seahawks fan. Yes, you want to win more games, but if you're not winning more games, if you are very low on the waiver list and you are able to kind of steal players from other teams, then take full advantage of that. So tip of the cap to John Schneider and the Seahawks scouting staff. They are looking to improve. They are looking to bring in the young talent that actually has the physical upside that could mean game changers. If, you know, with a little bit of development, I think Jacob Eason can be exactly that.
You look at Seattle's quarterback situations. I mentioned this is not surprising to me just from the fact that when he was released a few days ago, I thought immediately Washington Husky kid, former Lake Stevens standout, has a big arm, the ability to throw the ball downfield. He's only 23, going to be 24 in November. It sparked me as somebody, especially with the interest that Seattle has had in other quarterbacks. They had Blake Bortles in for a workout last week. They have been kicking cans around looking to find somebody that is going to be an upgrade over Jake Luton or Danny Etling, who they just added back to the practice squad last week. It's clearly evident to me, Rob, that there's not much comfort in the building about having Jake Luton be the number two quarterback right now. behind Geno Smith. If they were comfortable with that, they would have moved him up already to the 53-man roster. They had an open spot. Instead, they reverted him back to the practice squad after being a game day elevation last week. And they only have one more elevation with him remaining. And we know Russell Wilson's going to be out for at least two more games, if not longer. He could be out 4 or 5 games coming back from the surgery that he had. They're hoping he's back in week 10. But this is a kid that has way more upside and potential than Jake Luton or Danny Etling is going to have. Now, it's going to take him some time to learn the playbook. And from what I've been told, that is the biggest reason the Colts moved on from him as they did. He was not able to get the playbook down the way that they wanted him to. He struggled in the limited chances he had earlier this year replacing Carson Wentz. He did get thrown in to the fourth quarter of a tight game against a very good Rams defense. So I don't know how much stock to put into that. He got put into a really difficult situation, got picked off by Jalen Ramsey, who's done that to a lot of quarterbacks in this league, some really good quarterbacks in this league. But he's got those elite physical tools that if you can just reach him, and maybe this is the right situation, him being around Russell Wilson, even if Russell Wilson's not practicing right now, being around a worker like Russell Wilson could make all the difference for this kid who has just had his issues occasionally, it seems like, with work ethic and the dedication he needs to show. Maybe that changes in Seattle. If it doesn't work out, you can cut him in a week or two. It's not a big deal. It's not like you're going to be paying him a ton of money. So I agree with you. I think this is a home run pickup for him, a guy that's got a ton of upside that could potentially be your number two quarterback next year. Geno Smith's going to be a free agent after this season. If he plays well the next couple of weeks, somebody might give him a chance to compete for a starting spot with another team. Easton could be that fallback option that is a good enough quarterback from a potential standpoint that you could be developing and thinking, you know, especially with Russell Wilson, what happened last offseason, maybe a year or two from now, he could end up being the guy. And I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but he's got the kind of talent that he could start in this league if he's able to put everything together. It just hasn't happened to this point.
He could be the go-getter. He could be the foe-getter. I mean, that's the way I would look at Jacob Eason, is that this is a guy who has so much talent, as you just mentioned, Corbin. But at the same time, he has not shown the willingness to really, truly commit himself during his time with the Indianapolis Colts. That's what led to his release. During his time with the University of Washington. Frankly, during his time at the University of Georgia as well. You know, this is a really super talented quarterback. But, you know, you and I, Corbin, of course, both with our experience as teachers, we have seen too many students, frankly, that have all of the talent, the intelligence, or you know, whatever that is that you need, but they don't have the work ethic. And so that would be the conversation I would have with Jacob Eason, is like, wake up, young man. You have an opportunity here. You are now going to your second NFL team, and there's not a lot of third opportunities in the NFL, which is longtime Atlanta Falcons head coach Jerry Glanville. I'm aging myself, that said the NFL stands for not for long. Well, not for long if you are not going to be able to understand the offense on a team that you were with them for 2 years, as he was with the Indianapolis Colts. So I think that this is a perfect matchup with Jacob Eason with the Seattle Seahawks because of the fact that Russell Wilson might just be the most competitive man in all of the NFL. And Geno Smith has demonstrated his understanding, his willingness, his grit. So I think that he is an admirable person to look up to as well. And I think that the Indianapolis Colts have had that also. But now I think it's a little bit more of a sense of urgency, hopefully, for Jacob Eason. If you are good on and off the field, Jacob Eason, you could be great on it. And so that's the thing, is that you are getting opportunity here, and a very rare one at that. So to me, this is all the pressure is on Jacob Eason to truly take full advantage of this opportunity. And if he does not, as you just said, Corbin, the Seahawks are able to kind of cut ties very quickly. Obviously, there is a number of NFL teams that felt that they could already move away from Jacob Eason, a guy who has that size, who has that arm strength. But obviously, there's a lot of NFL teams out there who don't think that he is worth that chance. Jacob Eason, this is on you. You have that opportunity. Take full advantage of it.
Yep, and we'll see when he gets a chance to dress, if he dresses at all. Again, he's got to impress during this first week or two, where the Seahawks might be like, you know what, we took the flyer, didn't work out, we're moving on. But you would figure week 8 is probably the earliest he would dress, because he's only going to have 5 days now to try to learn an offense. I would presume that Luton or Etling is going to get elevated to the active roster since they've been around. They know the offense. And then maybe when Jacksonville comes to town in week 8, Easton maybe can be the backup for Geno Smith. We'll have to see how this plays out. But again, I think this is well worth whatever risk there is. I really think this is a no-risk addition to this team. And if it works out, you could have a guy that might be able to compete for the number 2 spot next year. And again, his ceiling, he could be a starter in the NFL. He has all the physical tools. So we'll see how it plays out. When we come back in the second quarter, it's Matchup Wednesday. We're going to look at when the Seahawks are on offense going up against one of the NFL's best defenses for the Saints. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hey, Seahawk fans, this is Corbin Smith with an incredible app everyone who buys gas needs to know about, Get Upside. Listeners are making up to 25 cents for every gallon of gas every time they fill up. Just download the free Get Upside app in the App Store or Google Play right now and use the promo code Touchdown to get a bonus 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents cash back. Don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Get cash back using Get Upside. Download the app for free and use the promo code Touchdown to get up to 50 cents per gallon back on your first tank. Some people who drive a lot are making as much as $200 to $300 a month in cash back, and there's no catch. The cash back gets added right to your account. You can cash out anytime with your bank account, PayPal, or an e-gift card for Amazon and other brands. Again, just download the free Get Upside app and use the promo code Touchdown to get up to 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. It's Matchup Wednesday. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. The Saints will be coming to Lumen Field on Monday night, boasting one of the best defenses in the NFL. They're giving up 18.2 points per game, tied for the second fewest in the league. As we talked about yesterday, Rob, this is a much different Saints team than we have seen for most of Sean Payton's tenure. They've had some decent defenses the last couple of years, but we're used to them putting up a bunch of points with Drew Brees under center. This is now a defensive-led team. They can put points on the board. They still have some offensive weapons, but they've got a lot of talent on the defensive side of the football. And so Seattle's going to have to deal with one of the best defenses in the league on Monday night. Geno Smith under center, second straight start, replacing Russell Wilson. Let's talk matchups, Rob. What's the first one that jumps out to you when we're looking at this Seahawks offense going up against this stout Saints defense?
Well, I think the very first one that you have to talk about, Corbin, is actually talking about a player that the Saints have not had since week one. And that is, how are the Seahawks going to be able to slow down Marcus Davenport? Now, he only has one sack on the season. He had two tackles for loss in that same game. The week one opening stunner victory over the Green Bay Packers. I mean, a lot of Seahawks fans out there might remember that Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay Packers, struggled out of the gate and got, you know, basically embarrassed by the New Orleans Saints. Well, that in large part was due to the fact that Marcus Davenport, Cameron Jordan, a longtime stud defensive lineman for the Saints, they had a field day against the Green Bay Packers offensive line. And considering the fact that we have seen pass rushers be able to frankly embarrass Seattle's front over the last couple of weeks. Certainly TJ Watt this past week, Cam Hayward as well for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That to me has to be the number one matchup that the Seahawks are looking at. So whether it be Brandon Shell at right tackle, Dwayne Brown at left tackle, it doesn't really matter. That the Seahawks have to be able to slow down a pass rush that has not been statistically very impressive for the New Orleans Saints, but I think that has to be priority number one. If you want Geno Smith to be able to help the Seahawks to victory, then help is the key word. You have to be able to protect them a little bit. And it was somewhat excusable when you're playing at Heinz Field and you have to worry about the snap count. You have to worry about the crowd noise and all that. But when you are playing in the so-called friendly confines of Lumen Field, where, by the way, the Seahawks are 0-2 at this point, then it is absolutely critical. It is priority number one that you have to be able to protect your quarterback. And so Dwayne Brown, Brandon Shell, it is, you know, it is the priority number one, being able to slow down the improved pass rush that I think that you are going to see from the Saints with Marcus Davenport, the former number one overall pick and easily the best pass rusher in the New Orleans Saints team, coming back to health this week against the Seahawks.
Yeah, the Saints have two or three really good pass rushers. Obviously, Jordan is the headliner. He's been one of the best defensive ends in the NFL for close to a decade. But Davenport's a player that's really started to come into his own early on in his career. This is a player the Saints gave up a lot to trade up and get coming out of UTSA and didn't play very well his first couple seasons in the league. But this is a guy that's got a ton of talent, really explosive off the edge. And when you look at the way that Dwayne Brown has played the last four games, I don't like piling it on him because he has been such a great tackle throughout his NFL career. He's been excellent in Seattle. The first two games of the year, he looked really good, but he has looked like a shell of himself the last four games. He's given up 12 pressures and four sacks in the last four games. I mean, that's not Dwayne Brown. It just something is up, whether it was the fact he didn't participate at all in training camp and after the first couple games, it ended up catching up with him. And I don't know what's going on there, but from a technique standpoint, he does not look right. There's been some communication issues there. You can't have that happen against the Saints front line with those two guys rushing off the edge. And Brandon Shell had a really tough matchup with TJ Watt last week. They put him on an island. He got beat several times. You can't have that happen this week against the Saints. The Seahawks are going to have to provide some chip help with running backs or tight ends. They're going to have to do something so they can give Geno Smith some time to be able to throw the football, especially because going into our next matchup here, this is the other problem they're going to have to deal with. As good as those two defensive ends are, you and I talked about this before the show. I think maybe the biggest strength of this Saints team, and it's so weird saying this because for a long time it was the biggest weakness when they had historically bad defenses around 8-9 years ago when Rob Ryan was running the defense. They couldn't stop any passing games. This secondary is fantastic. You've got Marshawn Lattimore at one cornerback spot. You have Paulson Adebo, the rookie out of Stanford, at another one. And in the secondary, they've got Williams, who's got a couple interceptions. They've also got Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who's really coming to his own. I mean, this is a loaded secondary. And so really, it's strength versus strength when you consider DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Freddie Swain going up against that group of corners and safeties. That's going to be must-see TV. And the Seahawks better hope that they're all-pro and Pro Bowl receivers bring their A game. And you could maybe include Gerald Everett there as well. You need your tight end to contribute when you're playing against a secondary this good that can match up with your star receivers.
Well, no question about it. I mean, the Saints have 9 interceptions through 5 games. I mean, the Seahawks would love to have that kind of ball skills from their defensive backs, and they have not yet seen that. So I think that this is absolutely a matchup. You could make the argument that this is the number one matchup here. You know, in terms of just bring your popcorn, as T.O. once said, you know, I think that this is the most exciting matchup from a fantasy football kind of a perspective, because as you mentioned, Marshawn Lattimore is an absolute superstar. Paulson Adebo, I think that he is going to be a kind of a dark horse defensive rookie of the year kind of candidate. Already is tied for the Saints lead with 2 interceptions, again, through just 5 games, because the Saints were on bye this past week. P.J. Williams has, 2 interceptions. He's another cornerback for them. Marcus Williams, the free safety from Utah, has a couple of interceptions as well. Again, the New Orleans Saints are taking away the football at the defensive back positions. And considering how much talent the Seahawks have at wide receiver, DK Metcalf, it's on you to make some big plays down the field. Tyler Lockett, it's on you to make some big plays for Geno Smith as well. Freddie Swain, Gerald Everett, talk about whoever you'd like. The New Orleans Saints have the athletes to be able to run with the Seahawks receivers. Again, we talked about before, it's incumbent on the Seahawks to be able to protect Geno Smith. That means pass protection. It also means your receivers and your other pass catchers have to make plays. And I thought that the Seahawks made some big plays against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously not enough to earn a victory. You're going to have to make even more plays against, a more talented New Orleans secondary if you are going to be able to get out of this game with a victory as well.
And I think that it bears note here, and this is going to be a fitting final matchup. And to me, this is one that's maybe being overlooked, but the Saints are the number 2 run defense in the NFL. So it's not like that this is just a team that can stop the pass and their run defense is suspect. They've been really good with their front 7. Demario Davis at linebacker. They got a couple unheralded defensive tackles that might be no names for the rest of the league. But I mean, they have been stuffing opposing running games. But I think for the Seahawks to be able to win this game, they're going to have to be able to establish the run. And coming off that strong second half against the Steelers, run defense has been pretty good this year as well. That should give them some confidence they can get the job done. The issue is going to be, do you have Damian Lewis? He's dealing with that shoulder issue that forced him out of the game on Sunday night. Is he going to be available? If not, you've got Jamarco Jones starting. Of course, Phil Haynes is still in your practice squad. You could elevate him if you wanted to play him at the left guard spot. But whoever's playing there, along with Kyle Fuller, who has really improved as this year's progressed, by the way, and Gabe Jackson at right guard, those three guys in the interior, they need to get the job done the way they did in the second half against the Steelers. Seattle is not going to be able to win this game slinging the ball all over the place, not just because you've got your backup quarterback in, but because the matchups favor the Saints. They've got the edge rushers coming on the outside to get to the quarterback if you drop back a bunch. They've got a really good secondary at the corner and safety spots. Not that the Seahawks can't get some big plays in the passing game, but you're not going to be able to live and die by that in this game. You have to be able to run the football. And this is not going to be an easy team to do that against, but the Seahawks have got to find a way. It starts with those big three guys in the middle of the offensive line. They need to carry over what they did second half last week into this game right away. Get that run game rolling. Give Geno Smith a run game to complement him on offense.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, as we talked about, I mean, this is a very talented New Orleans Saints defense, especially. And so, you know, I think that it is absolutely critical that the Seahawks establish the running game. You know, and we may sound like a broken record. We've been talking about this for years on end now. But the New Orleans Saints have played five games. They have held the limited their opposing offense to under 100 rushing yards in four of those five games. And so to me, it's absolutely critical that if you are going to try to protect Geno Smith, that you do so with your running game. And so whether it be Damian Lewis at left guard, whether it be Jamarco Jones, really doesn't matter. In my opinion, you have to be able to create some push. You know, and I look at Freddie Roach, one of the defensive tackle for New Orleans. I look at a guy like Albert Huggins, who's a big man. You have to be able to create some push. I love that you mentioned DeMario Davis. I don't think that he gets enough credit for how good of a football player, how instinctive, how physical of a linebacker that he is. I think the New Orleans Saints have a lot of good linebackers, frankly. I like the rookie Pete Werner. I'm a big fan of Caden Ellis, the linebacker out of Idaho that I watch myself really has become into a starting caliber player for the New Orleans Saints. This is a talented defense, but at the same time, this is a talented defense that has speed rather than being very stout at the point of attack. If the Seahawks are going to win this football game, and I think that they can, then they have to be able to impose their will in the running game, because the Saints, as you mentioned, Corbin, are really talented in defensive backfield. This is a squad that can be able to pull off some interceptions and take it back to the house. We talked about this in yesterday's show. The last two games the Seahawks and Saints played, there was a fumble return for a touchdown. The Seahawks cannot give up that kind of points on the defensive side of the ball against the New Orleans Saints, or they will lose this game. So to me, the safest way of doing that is be able to run the football. So whoever that is, whether it be Alex Collins, whether it be Travis Homer, whether it be DJ Dowse, whether it be Rashad Penny, run the ball down the Saints' throat. Get back to the beast mode mentality that helped the Seahawks beat the Saints last time that they made each other in the playoffs.
Yeah, they got to get that run game rolling and keep it rolling. The way that they went the second half last week, you got to be able to do that for four quarters because you can really wear down a defense. And I think that is the one way to get this Saints defense is try to physically wear them down. And then you can get some of those play action shots coming off. And Geno Smith has enough of an arm that you can do that. It's not like he's a liability in that standpoint. So they're going to have to be able to have a balanced offense. If they can't do that, it's going to be very difficult to get wins with a backup quarterback, especially when you're facing a defense of this caliber. We come back in the third quarter. We're going to flip the script. Seahawks on defense. They're coming off of a better performance against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Saints have plenty of weapons, including their star running back, Alvin Kamara. We're going to take a look at what matchups to watch when the Seahawks are on D. When we return, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This episode of Locked On Seahawks is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and family can come to reconnect. Win or lose, it's a place where teammates, competitors, the home team or the away team can come to recharge. I cannot tell you how many times I needed to recharge, and I headed to Mickey D's for Egg McMuffin, the classic Big Mac, or a couple of cheeseburgers, chicken nuggets, or fries, and a McFlurry. So head to your local McDonald's to refuel and reconnect. Did somebody say Locked On Seahawks watch party? McDonald's, I'm loving it.
If you haven't tried a Built Bar by now, you are missing out. They say it's a protein bar, but it does not taste like one. You have to try one of these amazing bars for yourself to believe it. Most protein bars are chalky or waxy or just plain hard to choke down. A Built Bar is soft, covered in 100% real chocolate. And when you bite into it, you know you're eating something different. It's more of an experience, one that you'll enjoy. In fact, you'd swear you're eating a candy bar. Built Bars are low carb, low calorie, low fat, low sugar, and high in protein. All the healthy benefits on top of just being purely delicious. So many flavors. Another great thing about Built Bar, there's so many mouthwatering flavors, including coconut, raspberry, mint brownie, salted caramel, my favorite peanut butter brownie. This month, Built is coming out with new limited time flavors every 3 to 4 days. So check their website often. You don't want to miss out. Go to Built.com and use the promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. Use the promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. It's Matchup Wednesday. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. We just looked at the Seahawks on offense going up against one of the best defenses in the league in the Saints. Now let's flip the script when the Seahawks are on defense going up against a Saints offense that looks a lot different than the unit that we've seen in the past. The Seahawks actually did not see Drew Brees the last time these two teams met a couple years ago because he was recovering from a thumb injury. Teddy Bridgewater started in that game for the Saints. Now they've got Jameis Winston under center. So I think we got to start with the former number one overall pick out of Florida State when we're looking at matchups, because if there's one thing that I still think Jameis Winston will be more than willing to do, his numbers maybe suggest he's been more disciplined in New Orleans than he ever was in Tampa Bay, but I have never seen this guy not be afraid to take his shots downfield, and he will try to thread the ball into double coverage. He is a big play seeker, and sometimes that has backfired on him. A lot of interceptions in his career, only 3 of them this year, but I'm looking at you, Quandre Diggs. This is the type of game that you live for as a center fielder, as a ball hawk in Seattle's cover 3 heavy defense. When the Saints try to get the ball downfield, going down the seams or on posts and corner routes, this is the game where Quandre Diggs can use his football IQ to bait Jameis Winston into making a throw that he can pick off. And we know Quandre Diggs is as good as any free safety in the league at hunting down interceptions. He's the only player in the Seahawks that has a pick this year. He has 2 of them. I think he can get number 3, maybe even number 4 in this game if he sets up Jameis Winston, because Winston will make those throws. He's not afraid to be aggressive downfield, and he'll pay for it sometimes.
He will, you know, and going back to his days at Florida State, he had Jameis Winston absolutely has been willing to take shots, especially deep down the middle. And so Quandre Diggs might be able to take full advantage of that. And so I love that this is the matchup that we're talking about initially, because for one, I think that Quandre Diggs has been Seattle's most consistent defender. As you talked about already, Corbin, he has 2 picks on the season. I think that he's setting himself up to be a Pro Bowler this year. And it's going to be a real conversation about how much money that Seattle is going to be willing to pay Quandre Diggs to retain him, considering the fact that many of the players that Seattle has resigned to this point have basically struggled to live up to those expectations. Quandre Diggs being one of the few exceptions of that, obviously has been brought back. Maybe his contract was sweetened just a little bit, but he is still playing with that same type of ferocity that you would want a player to be able to play with. And again, going back to Jameis Winston, as you mentioned, he was the number one overall pick. And I remember having conversations with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers general manager, Jason Light, at the time when he had to make the decision about whether it was going to be Jameis Winston, number one overall, or another player from the Pacific Northwest, Marcus Mariota from Oregon, who is going to be the number one overall selection? And as in Jason Light's own words, it wasn't that complicated of a decision. And I think that the fact that Jameis Winston is now a starter, Marcus Mariota is not. Jameis Winston now has a 12 touchdown versus 3 interception ratio at this point. I think that kind of speaks to what Jameis Winston has been able to do, just his physical talent that he possesses. But at the same time, in evaluating Jameis Winston at Florida State, since in Tampa Bay as well as New Orleans, he still has that willingness to test right over the middle. And that is going to be right in Quandre Diggs' wheelhouse. So to me, this is the single biggest number one matchup in this game is, can the Seahawks basically try to trick Jameis, try to get him to take the cheese, so to speak, and be able to throw the ball down the field? Because that might be the defensive back on Seattle's team that does have the best ball skills, might be able to create that big points, big play of opportunity for the Seahawks to get the type of game-changing turnover that we referenced just a quarter ago in how the Seahawks and Saints have faced up in the last couple of weeks, or the last couple of seasons, excuse me, when there has been defensive touchdowns in each of those games. The Seahawks need one of those performances in this game if they're going to be able to steal a win from the Saints.
Well, you can take that as your number one matchup, but just because we said it first does not mean it is my number one matchup, because there is a running back, and you know I'm biased being a former running back. Alvin Kamara is one of my favorites to watch. He's not in the Derrick Henry class because nobody is, but that second tier, your players like Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, that are dynamic dual threat playmakers. I mentioned it yesterday. Every time that I see Alvin Kamara play and I watch him just slip through tackles, I mean, all that I think about is, does that guy just roll butter on his uniform before he takes the field? Because guys just slip off of him. He just has that uniqueness to him, and he does it as a runner. He does it as a receiver. He killed the Seahawks in both capacities the last time these two teams met. So Bobby Wagner, Jordan Brooks, if Daryl Taylor plays, Cody Barton, those linebackers that have a lot of responsibilities to go after running backs out of the backfield on run plays, or whether they're going out of the backfield to catch the football, the onus is going to be on the linebackers to try to slow this guy down. You got to get into the ground. You've got to wrap. That is the most important thing when you're dealing with Alvin Kamara. Because again, if you're trying to arm tackle this guy, he's just going to slither through you. And then the next thing you know, he's in the end zone. He's not one of those guys that when you watch him, you think, man, he's got 4.2 speed. He can just absolutely fly through the defense, but he has sneaky speed and he's so quick. He's deceptive. And he just has that ability to just slide through tackles and make guys miss in space. So he really concerns me more than anybody that's on this Saints offense. You look at his numbers, 3.9 yards per carry this year. He hasn't been as productive as he has been in the past. But part of me thinks that's really scary going into this game when you consider the numbers that he has put up against the Seahawks in the past. That, to me, is the number one player that the Seahawks must key in on. Bobby Wagner, Jordan Brooks, you guys need to have your A game ready to go, especially defending him as a receiver, because if he gets out on swing routes or he's running his Texas routes, whatever they're having him run, and you've got a linebacker against him, that is typically a major disadvantage for the defense. Seattle's linebackers, they have to make it that they can at least make that an even draw. They have the talent there, but you better bring your A game or he will expose you.
He absolutely will expose you. I can't disagree with you in that regard. I mean, he's one of those players that you can't stop him. You just only hope to contain him. And, you know, with the butter reference, I think that's appropriate. You know, for a lot of people, when they think back to Jameis Winston and his time at Florida State, there are some crab legs conversations out there. And I think that, hey, being a Pacific Northwest guy, there is not much anything better than
crab legs. I want some crab now. Thanks.
With a little bit of crab legs and some good butter. And so Alvin Kamara absolutely provides that. And you're right, Corbin. I mean, his ability out of the backfield, not only as a runner, but as a receiver as well, considering how many receptions the Seahawks have given to running backs, including the aforementioned Derrick Henry, as well as Najee Harris and the Pittsburgh Steelers just this past week. When you have a receiver that has the hands that Alvin Kamara has, I mean, he is New Orleans' leading receiver at this point. So it's not a surprising matchup. I think that it's absolutely a critical matchup, and one that the Seahawks have to be able to basically just minimize him. And, oh, by the way, we talked about the former University of Washington player Jacob Eason as being a addition to the Seahawks earlier in today's show. Dwayne Washington, another former University of Washington Husky player at the running back position, is Kamara's primary backup at this point. And then, oh, by the way, that there's also the quarterback slash running back slash tight end slash do-it-all player Taysom Hill from BYU, who also makes the New Orleans Saints running game that much more dynamic. So that's the thing, is that the Seahawks linebackers and Bobby Wagner and obviously Jordan Brooks, Cody Barton, whoever it is that's going to be playing at the linebacker position for Seattle in this week's game, it is critical considering the fact that New Orleans does not have the typical dynamic talent, the wide receiver positions that they've had in the past. It is absolutely critical that you try to minimize the damage that is being made from New Orleans running backs, from the quarterback Taysom Hill, in the short to intermediate passing game. If you don't do that, the New Orleans Saints will do the exact same thing the Pittsburgh Steelers will do. They worked their way down the field and scored enough points to emerge from a victory when the Seahawks, frankly, were the more talented, more physical team throughout the rest of the game.
Last matchup here real quick. We could talk wide receivers, and typically when we're talking about the Saints, they are low to the position. And no offense, because they do have some good guys in that group. Marquez Callaway has been a breakout star for him this year. Deontay Harris has put up some pretty good numbers, but they have another player that is kind of that hybrid tight end receiver, around 6'4", 231 pounds, in Juwan Johnson. This year, 6 receptions for 64 yards, and he has scored 3 touchdowns. So half his receptions have been touchdowns. He has been a monster to contain in the red zone. This, to me, is a matchup that has to be highlighted that maybe a lot of fans aren't going to know about going into this game, because one thing that Jamal Adams has really struggled with in his 2 years with the team, he can say whatever he wants, but he's had his issues in coverage. I think Jamal Adams is going to get matched up against Juwan Johnson quite a bit in this game, and I also think Marquise Blair in the slot. This kid has had a lot of reps running routes out of the slot. I think both those players are going to get opportunities in coverage going against Juwan Johnson, who's got good athleticism. He's got good size, soft hands. He's really coming into his own as that hybrid tight end that Sean Payton loves to have in his offense. To me, this is kind of that under the rug matchup that maybe nobody else is talking about, but me watching the film, I'm thinking that is a guy, given the track record the Seahawks have against tight ends, that scares the bejeebers out of me. If Jamal Adams is not going to be playing at his very best and Marquise Blair's not playing at his very best, I could see Jameis Winston attacking Seattle's defense with this athletic young tight end, and he could potentially have a career game. So to me, this is that under the rug, under the radar, however you want to put it, matchup that could have major ramifications in this game.
Yeah, it's funny. I was kind of listening on Sirius XM Radio, Corbin, and I was listening to some of their fantasy football experts or analysts, and they were talking about the fact that Seattle has given up as many receiving yards and touchdowns to tight ends over the Pete Carroll years as just about any team in the league. And so considering that Juwan Johnson has 3 touchdown receptions on the year, that ties him with Marquez Callaway for the most for the New Orleans Saints, and how much Seattle has struggled to protect against tight ends in the past, I think you can just look at just about any team that you've seen Seattle go up against this week. I mean, whether it be Pittsburgh this past week, whether it be against Minnesota, I mean, some tight ends that not a lot of even the most interested NFL fans out there would necessarily know their names right off of the top of their heads. And yet they have had success. And so a guy like Juwan Johnson, who has had statistical success so far this season, then he absolutely should be a matchup the Seahawks should be paying attention to. So, yeah, I think it's on Jamal Adams to be able to make a play. You cannot let footballs bounce off of your helmet. You have to be able to make big plays if you are going to be targeted. And I absolutely think that Jameis Winston, a Mobile, Alabama, kind of the deep south kind of a guy who is going to be going up against a former LSU star in Jamal Adams. Yeah, I think that he is going to be targeting that position of the field. So it's on you, Jamal Adams. I want to see if you're going to be able to make some plays. And if it be a Marquise Blair, if it be an Ugo Amadi, somebody else, sure, they have to make plays as well. But until number 33 starts making the type of plays that justifies his contract, then every team in the NFL, certainly one coached by a guy like Sean Payton, is going to be targeting him. And so to me, this is, again, one of the key matchups that the Seahawks absolutely have to be focusing on.
Thanks for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. Now make sure to have Peacock and Williams, the NFL show, be your second listen. Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson give you the expert NFL analysis in less than 30 minutes. It's free and available on all platforms. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to check out Locked On Seahawks on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the all-new Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. When I return on Thursday, I'll be joining my friend Ross Jackson, host of Locked On Saints, for our weekly Crossover Thursday episode. Going to continue diving into this upcoming Monday night clash at Lumen Field. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.